seated. Court is ready to hear argument in 040751, consolidated with 040752.
Thank you, may it please the court. My name is Brad Wagner, and I'm here representing TMPA. We are here to resolve an issue of statutory construction that is framed by TMPA's declaratory judgment. And that is, does the PUC have the power and authority to abrogate and tear apart and MOUs of municipally owned utilities, existing sales contract, one that is bundled, and or regulate or change that bundled sales rate of the MOU. Before I get into the meat of the argument, I'd like to give you a brief example to try to illustrate what we're talking about when we talk about a bundled contract. And again, this is not a perfect example, but for some of us who are old enough to remember the milkman used to deliver milk at the door, and that does go back a ways. The milkman sold that milk at 25 cents a bottle, delivered at the doorstep. Regardless of the costs and how it came to pass that the milk went from the dairy to the distributor to the doorstep. And in this example, what I'm going to suggest is that the milkman had to travel on toll roads. And the first customer he came to, there may have been a dollar charge. The second customer, by the time he got off, there was an extra $2, maybe $3 for the next one, and $4. But nonetheless, the price set by the contract between the customer and the milkman was 25 cents a bottle. It was an average price, and it did not depend on anything other than what was the negotiated contract price. It included all the services, the cost of the milk, and the delivery, and whatever toll charges got you to the point of the doorstep. That is the situation we're dealing with here. And I think it is important there are at least three things that we can agree upon here, and I think if you read the briefs, there's not a lot we agree on, but there are several, and there's one that's not relevant. The first thing we agree on is the PUC has no jurisdiction to adjudicate contracts, and they are not claiming that they have done that here. That is to actually settle a contract dispute here. The second is everyone agrees the only source for power here, which is found in Chapter 35 of PURA, has no express grant of authority to the PUC to set aside or abrogate a municipally owned utility's contracts. So we're going to have to be looking for an implied power. And the third thing that, again, is agreed and that we are not disputing is that the Public Utility Commission, for regulatory purposes, could come in and make certain decisions such as putting a party in its rate matrix. In other words, we know from the facts who was presented with a dispute as to which parties can go into which places in the matrix. The commission, we believe, could validly exercise its jurisdiction and say, for purposes of our regulatory scheme, I can put X in here or Y in there. But they need to say that is for regulatory purposes only, and we are not adjudicating what the contract says. Finally, what is not relevant here, arguments about waiver, estoppel, what the contract says, those are not relevant when you look at this declaratory judgment we're looking for here. Those belong, and all of those arguments belong, in the contract lawsuit between the parties that is pending in Grimes County, and nothing has been decided there. So what we start out with is the bundled contract.
Now, in your example about the bottled milk and the bundle, right, what is your contention that PUC is doing to that bundle, to your analogy?
In our analogy, and I'll finish it out with the river, in essence, the PUC at this point is the regulator and setting the charges for the toll road. In other words, they decide that dollar, $2 in the first instance. And then what they've come along and done is to that first customer say, well, you don't have to pay 25 cents a bottle. You get to pay, you have to pay, and we can only collect something less than that because you're the first customer in that chain, and the person down the furthest end of the list ultimately and presumably will have to pay a lot more.
So basically, if I can, there's a lot here.
There's a lot here.
Can we boil it down to say that we're trying to reconcile 35004C and 40054E?
And 40.101 and 40.055. The issues, and if I can, I'll jump if you'd like me to. We've got to find, the court would need to find an implied power in Chapter 35, which you talked about, for the commission to have the power to abrogate or set aside and enter and change the sales contract. We have a sales contract that says, I, TMPA, will sell to you, Brian, at your doorstep. The power, right there.
You say that it's not relevant, waiver estoppel in the contractual terms.
Correct.
But what if the contract were clearly unbundled? Wouldn't the PUC then have the authority to treat the cities as the customers rather than the utility?
I think the answer, Justice Heck, is yes. In other words, if the contract by the court over in Grimes County had already said to TMPA and Brian, your contract is no longer what it is on its face, but I'm going to change it, and we're going to change the delivery point back to the plant.
So it seems to me those terms are relevant. In fact, the case turns on.
Well, they aren't relevant for the purpose of our declaratory judgment because we don't have that. You're changing the starting facts, which has not been determined yet.
No, I'm just wondering, when you come in and
right.
we're going to determine the jurisdiction of the commission
right.
to hear these kinds of cases, it seems like the first question you're going to have to answer is it bundled or unbundled?
Correct. And the only place you can get that answer is to go over to the courthouse in Grimes County. And that hadn't been done yet. We don't have that statement. We don't have a piece of paper from that all the parties have signed saying we've unbundled it, and we do not have a judgment out of that Grimes County courthouse saying it's been unbundled. Until you get there, there is no appropriate starting place to start out with the assumption that the contract's unbundled.
And here's another kind of problem I have. It seems like to rest the commission's jurisdiction, its power to act, on whether the private parties think their agreement is bundled or unbundled, it seems to me to be an odd predicate for an agency jurisdiction. Usually the jurisdiction depends on the nature of the thing that's being regulated, not whether the parties have agreed one way or the other.
To some degree, I think you're right, and I think this goes back to Justice O'Neill's question, which is the concept of what did Chapter 35 do in the first instance? You have to recognize, what was it enacted for in 1995? It was enacted to open up these ERCOT transmissions and sales because intervening utilities between a generator and a new buyer, they didn't have a way to get across. That transmission system could block them. Chapter 35 came in, and I know you were sitting on the court in the San Antonio case, and did not agree with the position that we staked out at that time. But the point was, the goal of Chapter 35 was to open up transmission, thereby allowing for new sales and new transactions to occur. Now, the law on statutory construction is, looking at the power of the commission, does it have the power to set aside or change an existing MOUs contracts, and MOUs are not normally regulated by the Public Utility Commission. We've got to look, is there an implied power in Chapter 35, which is where I think Justice O'Neill was asking me about first. And the answer is there is no basis for a reasonable necessity to come up with an implied power to vitiate or abrogate a sales contract.
Well, let me ask this question in terms of the powers enumerated in 35.04C. What is the commission's interest in ensuring that a utility's other customers don't bear the cost vis-a-vis an MOU?
Okay. Those are all handled, Your Honor, and I know for some of you who may or may not be as familiar with some of this area, but those are handled by the commission when it sets its transmission rates. And in effect, the commission, well not in effect, the commission has already taken that in account by setting all the transmission rates. TMPA's sales rate does not change what those transmission rates are. It uses those transmission rates set by the commission and puts them into its formula for the sales. It does not change those transmission rates at all. Those are set just like the tolls were set in my milkman example. The milkman doesn't get to change what that toll is, neither can TMPA. And TMPA's board has never set a transmission rate. Never. It takes the transmission rates, the tolls in my milkman example, and plugs them into its calculus to derive the sales rate of 25 cents a bottle. And each customer on TMPA's system pays the same exact price. An example, 10 cents a kilowatt or 25 cents a bottle. In other words, it is not, and that's been the way the contract is read and been interpreted for almost 30 years now. And that was really designed to make the siting of the plant equidistant from these four customers. Thank you.
No further questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Ms. Elizabeth Sterling and Mr. Lynn, you will be an argument to the respondent. Mr. Sterling will open the first amendment.
May it please the court. The legislature granted the Public Utility Commission authority to regulate wholesale transmission.
But I suppose, coming to the last statement, or close to the last statement, of the petitioner, something like the commission has no implied power to set aside a municipal utilities contract. I suppose you don't disagree with that.
It depends on what they're contracting about. A municipal utility doesn't have authority to contract to charge a rate that is unreasonable, that is not comparable, that charges one customer for service that's really provided to another customer. However, I do think that the terms unbundling and sales rate and sales contract that are used by TMPA in this case are misleading. Sales rate and sales contract.
Well, let me just be clear, though. I take it that the commission thinks it's giving effect to the contract, that it's not setting it aside, abrogating it, changing it, modifying it, or is that not correct?
In this case, let me step back a moment. To answer that question, I'd like to talk about the nature of the unbundling that's going on here. The commission needs to know how much is being charged for the transmission service that's being provided, and rather than the sale of electricity. And the commission adopted a rule which, in the city public service case, this court found to be an example of the kind of rule that was authorized, that said it's proper to make the transmission provider come in and separate out the transmission costs and rates from the cost and rates for the sale of electricity. They have to come report that. The court didn't say it, but presumably that's true whether there's a contract or not. They have to separate them out. So the question of whether the commission could go in and separate a contract really isn't presented because the rule already required them to separate their pieces. And if I haven't answered
So it doesn't make any difference to the commission whether this is clearly a bundled contract or clearly an unbundled contract. The transmission nominations are going to be made by the end user? I'm not clear.
Whether it's bundled or not, they have to report to the commission what part of it has to do with transmission service. And the commission has authority over the transmission service piece of that, authority to look at it and decide whether it's reasonable, authority in the first case that came to the commission to look at the dispute and decide at the end of the dispute what rate should be charged. Now, there's a remand on that. The commission's decision on that needs to be remade, and what we're looking at here is only the question of does the commission have authority to do that?
Well, I'm still not clear. The city of Bryan says that TMPA and the northern cities have been unsuccessful in these cases largely because their arguments here directly contradict their representations to the commission in the 1997 and 1998 proceedings regarding who was the customer and who should make the nominations. Do you agree with that or disagree with that?
I agree that that's a large part of what's going on here. I certainly agree that the commission's decision in the 99 case was that it didn't even need to worry about whether or not there was a problem with the contract, because the fact that TMPA had done it a different way, had said Bryan is the customer in 97 and 98, was an indication that it must be consistent with their contract, because we presume they weren't going around all agreeing to break their contract. So the commission said, we aren't even asked to decide that in this particular case.
But if that were the issue, I mean, at least tentatively, your position is bundled or unbundled, we can still take a look at the transmission rates.
Yes, and that this court's recognized that authority, that in fact, without that authority, the commission can't do what it's required to do by the legislature.
And I don't understand that statement. Why? What difference does it make whether the customer is TMPA or the city of Bryan? If these cities want to do the milk bottle deal, that's fine with them, then what difference does it make to the commission?
The commission needs to know who the customer is in order to figure out whether the transmission rate is comparable, non-discriminatory, and so forth. So it's a necessary first step in the process
So I guess I'm asking, is the commission going to make that determination, or are you going to let the parties make it?
If the parties agree who the customer is, which has happened in several cases where you've got something similar to this situation, the commission has accepted their agreement that there's a reference to that in this record about LCRA and some other entities where they agreed that the one who's providing the wholesale power was also the transmission customer. The commission says, if y'all agree to that, that's fine. But in this case, you've got Bryan and TMPA disagreeing about who the customer is, and Bryan alleging that TMPA is charging rates that are illegal, that are improper under Chapter 35, that violate Chapter 35.
But isn't the predicate question, did they really have that agreement or not? Because if TMP is correct and Bryan is wrong and they had that agreement, then wouldn't that be like the case that you mentioned earlier where the people all come in and say, we agree?
Well, there is the fact that you pointed out earlier that clearly they appear to have had a different agreement in the first 2 years, so that it's not a question of some agreement already being in place. Am I responding there?
Well, my basic question that I'm trying to get to is, does it make any difference what the agreement is? Because if it does, then we have a question, should the PUC or can the PUC decide that issue? Or does the court out in Grimes County have to decide it? And so what I'm hearing you say is that if the parties all come in and say, yes, we've agreed that the entity in TMPA's position is the customer, then you say, well, that's fine with us. and you go ahead and treat it that way. If they're not agreed, then you say, well, the commission needs to decide which way is it.
Yes, Your Honor.
I guess my question is, so the contract does make a difference because you would treat the situations differently if everybody agreed than if they didn't. And then the next question is, why should the commission get to make that determination rather than a trial court?
Because the question of customer implicates a lot of things that are very particularly part of the commission's expertise and part of the commission's role. When I said that the commission would, that parties could come in and agree who the transmission customer was, I didn't express it, but that would come in with some limitations. I mean, they couldn't come in and say, I'm the transmission customer because I don't provide electricity, I don't have anything to do with it. You need the commission's expertise frequently to be looking at what's going on in the situation here. It's not something that's going to be determined purely by the contract. There's very much having to do with how the electricity has been being treated that impacts the question of who the customer is. It's simply that the commission has recognized that, for example, when you've got cooperatives, sometimes you have a what's called a generation and transmission cooperative, where this co-op doesn't provide electricity to a retail customer but generates electricity and transmits it to other cooperatives who actually provide it to retail customers. There may be problems having to do with their financing that would require them to keep the transmission provider to keep the generation and transmission cooperative treated as the transmission customer. The commission has the expertise to look at that and say, yes, we recognize that that's necessary in these circumstances. We also recognize you've all agreed in these circumstances that that's how it's going to be treated, and we accept that.
And if there were a final judgment in this case that they had agreed to it and that the city of Bryan is simply wrong about not agreeing, how would the commission treat that?
I'm not sure how the commission would treat that. I think the commission would have authority to look at that decision, recognize what the court had decided about the decision, and then look at that in light of Cura and say, does that work under what the legislature has told us about how to regulate transmission service? Is it someone off the street is it the equivalent to someone off the street having reached an agreement with someone else as to who the transmission customer is?
But isn't that what Chapter 40 was designed to do, to allow just that to occur?
Chapter 40, to be interpreted the way that TMPA wants Chapter 40, particularly 40.101, to be interpreted, would create an absurd result. To allow the parties to enter into a contract that totally avoids the legislative scheme would be absurd. The legislature created a complex regulatory scheme here. It regulates wholesale transmission service. It promotes competition in the sales of electricity.
But the purpose was generally to do that with IOUs as opposed to MOUs, right? I mean, what the legislature seemed to use with Chapter 40 to have indicated intent sort of leave these alone.
I think adopted Chapter 40, showing its intent that with regard to retail competition, that most of the decisions would be left up to the municipally owned utility. But it repeatedly makes statements. There are statements in 40.004, 055, that the commission continues to have control over wholesale transmission service, that it's not hands-off with regard to that, that the scheme that was adopted 4 years earlier and that you can find in Chapter 35 continues, that the commission is supposed to regulate wholesale transmission services so that we can have competition in wholesale sales of electricity.
Ms. Sterling, by my watch, you've gone over your 10 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm Lynn Hughes, and I'm here on behalf of the city of Bryan, and I would like to focus the court's attention on the fact that it doesn't matter what you call the contract. You can call the contract bundled, as TMPA has done. You can say over and over and over again, oh, they've abrogated the contract, they've interfered with the sales rate, but those are not the facts before the court. The facts before the court are that this contract is subject to the extant regulatory regime at whatever time that regime is in effect. In 1976, when the contract was entered into, there were no regulations pertaining to wholesale transmission costs. And so, as this court recognized in the San Antonio case, in order to provide transmission, to obtain transmission, parties entered into private contracts. And that led to a problem because, as Mr. Wagner has intimated, those entities that controlled wholesale transmission service were able to prevent parties who wanted transmission service so that they could buy power from someone else from getting that transmission service. In 1995, with the enactment of PURA 95, that regulatory scheme changed, and the legislature set forth in 35 certain commandments, certain mandates that transmission providers have to follow. They have to provide open access. They have to do so non-preferentially. They can't refer one of their customers over another.
But isn't it possible that the four cities involved here either could be customers or might not be customers?
That's correct under commission rules.
And so who makes that decision?
The PUC has to make that decision.
Even if they've agreed otherwise.
If there were not a dispute, Your Honor, it wouldn't come before the commission.
Well, somebody's got to nominate the load, so who doesn't?
Well, if there is an agreement, as there was in the 1997 and 1998 dockets, then the party that everyone agrees can nominate the load nominates the load.
And the PUC can't say no to that.
And the PUC wouldn't, under this court's opinion in San Antonio, the PUC's jurisdiction extends only to disputes, at least pre-1999.
So if parties can agree to that, and then the PUC has to treat it that way, don't we need to know, have the parties agreed or not?
We need to know, in order to determine whether the commission has jurisdiction, we need to know if there's a dispute. And there clearly is a dispute here. Now let me return for a moment, if I might, to this court's decision in In Re Entergy, which was handed down last year, and how that impacts what TMPA and all of its member cities did in the 1997 and 1998 dockets. Recall that initially the commission was treating TMPA as the transmission service customer, which meant that TMPA would be paying transmission service charges to every other entity in ERCOT. As TMPA so helpfully admitted in its brief, there was an agreement among all of the cities and TMPA for each city to nominate its own load and to take legal responsibility for arranging for and paying for its own transmission service.
But the amicus STEC has raised the issue, still got a few more minutes, has raised the question whether the disagreement of one of the participants might yield a different result. And your response says that mutual choice is the cities and the utility is the opposite of the situation that STEC fears, that any one of STEC's members could unilaterally choose to be treated as an unbundled customer. But that does not seem to meet the argument very squarely, because if one did choose, one of the members did unilaterally choose, there would be a dispute.
That's correct.
And then you'd have to go to the commission.
And then you'd have to go to the commission. And presented with a dispute,
as this court said in San Antonio, the commission has the authority to decide, and it would decide it under the standards of Chapter 35. Now, I do want to return to the 1997 and 1998 dockets because they're very important. TMPA has gone a long way here by claiming that the contract is bundled. And what TMPA says, and you can see this clearly in 20381, which is the 1999 proceeding, TMPA didn't even introduce the contract. What TMPA said was, we have a dispute here. TMPA nominated Brian Slow. Brian nominated its load. In order to assess wholesale transmission charges, as the statute now commands the PUC to do in the first instance, the PUC had to decide who's the customer. They can't both be the customer. And so what the only thing that the commission had in front of it in the 20381 docket in the 1999 proceeding was TMPA's actions and its member city's actions in the 1997 and 1998 docket. And what the commission said was that shows that the contract doesn't preclude Brian from being the transmission service customer. And if you look at the contract, the power sales contract, if you look at Section 7 and you look at Schedule B, you will find that what it says is this: rates and charges shall be non-discriminatory and reasonable. And when the board of directors proposes to establish a new rate, which it does every year, you turn to Schedule B, and Schedule B specifically subjects this contract to the existing regulatory structure.
But if, again, if TMPA is the customer, this contract is not discriminatory or preferential.
That puts the cart before the horse.
Well, but if
the question,
if it worked, if that's who the customer, it seems to me that whether it's preferential or discriminatory depends on who the customer is.
That's not, I don't think that's correct, Your Honor, because the contract itself does not require TMPA to be the customer. And therefore, that decision is left up to the commission.
But if the commission decided TMPA was the customer, then there's nothing preferential or discriminatory about the way the charges are allocated.
Brian would say that there still is, because what TMPA's board of directors under the control of the Northern Cities has done is to say, okay, yeah, we're going to pay, the Northern Cities are going to pay the rates that the commission has allocated. They're going to pay them to TMPA. They're going to pay them to TXU for TXU's transmission lines, and if you look at our pretty maps, you can see the overlay of the transmission lines onto the ERCOT grid. May I finish?
Are there any further questions? Thank you, Council.
May it please the Court, I'd like to get back to a point or two that I probably didn't get to, and perhaps I should have left more time opening. But again, we need to separate what is being done for regulatory purpose and what is the contract. Now, the Commission, I know they have, in the underlying orders, came back and ordered the TMPA could not charge its contract sales price.
Mr. Wagner, Ms. Yu says it doesn't matter if the contracts are bundled or unbundled. Can you address that?
Well, Your Honor, for purposes of our declaratory judgment, which is what we're here to talk about, we're not arguing about the APA appeal. You have to start with the proposition that the contracts are bundled. That's what our declaratory judgment asks. And I will submit to you that if the facts were different, we would not even have a case in controversy. You shouldn't be here, and we shouldn't be here, and none of these people have told you we don't have a case in controversy. In fact, Brian, in his brief, admits the contract was bundled.
I guess I'm a little bit confused about the bundled, unbundled.
I understand it's sometimes difficult.
Well, but is it possible to, it seems like the transmission charges, in a postage stamp type rate, in a bundle type rate, it seems like the transmission charges, whatever you determine them to be, affect the sales price. So that if you say this entity is getting charged more transmission costs than they should, that's going to affect the rate, the sales rate.
Well, let me see if I can explain how TMPA does it, Your Honor. We take the commission set rates. We don't change those rates. Whatever it costs to get the power to the delivery points, whatever we pay, we throw them all into a big bundle. We deliver by the total number of kilowatts, and we come up with, for example, 10 cents per kilowatt. The contract says each member city is going to get charged the same price, 10 cents per kilowatt, regardless of where you are in our system. That is your postage stamp methodology. That is one that's been used by the PUC.
But I guess what I'm saying is if you tinker then with the transmission rate for one of those entities and you reallocate the transmission rate to be fair and non-discriminatory, you can't have a postage stamp rate. Is that right?
Well, if you believe what their statement is, it's fair. Fair only means it's closer to the plant. Okay, let's get back to that, the milk example. Is it fair that the first customer on that route only gets to pay something less than 25 cents because they're closer to the plant? No. Postage stamp rates are used all throughout this state. They're used in this city. You pay it. They're used by the PUC.
I guess that's my question is if you unbundle and look at transmission charges separately, aren't you in effect saying we're not going to approve postage stamp rates? We're not going to allow that pricing structure to occur.
If we unbundled and changed the delivery points to the contract.
Right.
Okay, then TMPA would not be responsible for getting the power from here to here or here to here or here to here. But they are under the contract. You've supposed an assumption that is not in the contract. There would be a different result if the contract had been unbundled already and the delivery point was at the generator. We don't dispute that. But Chapter 40, for example, I need to get back to this implied power. What we're talking about here is the 25 cents for the milk bottle or the 10 cents per kilowatt. And is there an implied power to come in and tear apart that rate? That is the contract rate. That is the starting point.
Is one source of that power the need to promote competition and ensure its vitality or not?
No, because the competition gets taken care of. Open access transmissions going on irrespective of what happens in this one sales contract or in the many other wholesale contracts.
But people, O'Brien, are paying more than they would be if the city had made a better deal back in 1976.
If they could have changed the deal that they made, and that's what they want to do, Your Honor, because they now have a different methodology under one regulatory scheme that would give them an advantage. They want to change what they agreed to almost 30 years ago, and we do not agree that they can do that, and the only way they can do it is in a contract lawsuit, not go run into the Public Utility Commission.
What is the status of that case?
It is just sitting there pending and has not been, no decision has been made. But the point is, ultimately, you've got to determine, is there a basis to imply a power here? And even if you were going to think there was one, Chapter 40.101 comes along and says unequivocally, and it talks about wholesale. Look at the language. It's in your tab book. It says the PUC cannot abrogate or interfere with a municipally owned wholesale or retail or wholesale. The legislature knew these contracts existed. They are the security for the bonds the TMPA issues. Do you believe that the legislature intended to let the PUC go out and tear apart these contracts and put in jeopardy the bonds?
How would it put the bonds in jeopardy?
Well, these bonds are based on these underlying contracts. The revenues from the bonds are the security. If all of a sudden the money doesn't go, what happens?
Well, but doesn't seem like the security is going to be impaired. It's just a question of what share each of these four cities is going to contribute.
Well, there's nothing that requires the other cities to go up in their price, is there? In other words, that's one of the other parts of this that the commission doesn't want to tell you about. They want to let a customer come in and say, I'm going to unbundle if I want to. And they want to say, yeah, that's fine. What about TMPA? Can we come in and say, hey, we'd like to get a higher price? That isn't part of the deal. They're being inconsistent. They want to allow one party to a contract out of it for any reason or for no reason, because they have given no reason other than you have a dispute. And I submit under the statute, we've got to get back to what the issue is here, which is statutory construction. And does the commission have the power to abrogate or change? And it is important what the contract is. A sales contract. This is not a transmission contract any more than the milkman's contract was a contract for some kind of something else. It is a delivered product at your door. 25 cents per bottle. 10 cents per kilowatt. Just like your bill at home comes. It is not two contracts. And that's all I guess. Have time.
Thank you. The clause is submitted, and the court will take another brief recess.
All right.